So my guest today is a Scottish actor whose career has journeyed through iconic entertainment institutions. From his television debut in 2007 in Doctor Who, to playing Bane in two installments of the Hobbit film series, to his long-standing role as young Ian in Starz Television's worldwide smash Outlander, with many other brilliant roles to add to all of that. He's about to get super busy filming the final season of Outlander, so I'm really pleased he could join me at Summer for us for a cup of tea and a chat. Welcome, John Bell.
Hello.
Hello, welcome to the Summer for Us podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Are you comfortable?
I'm very comfortable. I'm sitting. It's like the best thing ever.
I know, sitting is good. It's really nice to have you here. We were just talking about your feature in the winter issue, and you were telling me earlier that you've read it.
Yes.
Which is great.
It's lovely. It's just a wonderful magazine to be a part of. The minute it came through that request, I was like, this is something I'm really interested in. Some of your past alumni I'm a huge fan of, and are role models of mine too, that have been in the magazine. So I felt like it just spoke to me. So I'm very happy to be here to chat all things.
Where are we meeting you just now? Are you tired? Are you jet lagged?
I am. I'm actually feeling pretty good today. I've been quite busy recently, which has been a new feeling because there has been quite a upheaval in the industry, as you know, at the moment.
Sure, we're just coming out of the writers.
The WGA strikes, which are amazing. They've found a deal that everyone's happy with, so that's fantastic. Go on, the writers. We're still waiting for SAG to find their deal. But with the writer strikes coming to a close, things are beginning to pick up again. And it's exciting to be back at work and feeling like, okay, we can move forward and there's stuff on the horizon that we can focus on, with everyone having a great deal. So I've been doing a little bit of traveling over in my favorite city in the world.
Where's that? Let me try and guess. It sounds like a stereotype. New York.
Yes. Absolutely. Like I am obsessed with New York City.
Would you live there?
Yeah, 100%. Like the plan is to be there one day.
Wow.
Yeah, 100%. I've never felt more comfortable and excited and alive, and yeah, just like I felt like I belonged there immediately. So I was over there with my partner and we had a lovely week there. And then we went to LA, and LA was fun too. Not as cool as New York, sorry, West Coasters. But also had a fun time there. So I've been kind of jotting around the States, which I love. And then came over and did a little cameo in a little Irish independent film, which was a wonderful experience for me because it was a real full circle moment. The director of this film, Vic Saron, directed me in one of my first ever films when I was 9, 10 years old.
Is that the Sunshine one?
Yeah, Shine of Rainbows, it's
Shine
called.
Shine of Rainbows.
Shine of Rainbows. Yeah.
That's the one.
So, yeah, came over to Ireland to do that with him as a little cameo and a full circle moment. And that was really sweet. And it was lovely to be back on a set full of Irish people. Love Ireland. And then came back here and had a little bit of chill time, and now I'm in beautiful Edinburgh with you.
It's brilliant. No full circle moment yet, but I'll interview again in 20 years' time.
Yes.
And then there'll be that lovely full circle.
We can do like the Billie Eilish thing. We just check in every 2 years.
Yeah, perfect.
You know.
So I can't talk about your work without starting at the beginning.
Mm.
And this is going to mean a lot to a lot of our listeners.
Yeah.
That your first acting role was in Doctor Who.
My first big acting role. The first thing I did professionally was a play at the King's Theatre in Glasgow called An Inspector Calls.
I remember it was from my A-levels.
Yes, actually. It's an iconic play. It was J.B. Priestley's production of it, which is an iconic production. And that's really where I think things started to click in my head that I wanted to keep doing this with the responsibility, with the performance, with an audience. Because for 40 minutes of the play, each night I had to sit on that stage and watch the actors perform. So I was on the stage, sat, so I couldn't move. I was part of the play in costume, but I just had to stay very kind of like a ghostly Victorian child. But yeah, so I played that little role, and that those 40 minutes of just like uninterrupted watching of these actors again and again each night, I think really started to cement in my head like, wow, this is really cool. So I did that, and then I played Chip in Beauty and the Beast in the King's Theatre as well, which was like a dream come true. I mean, I was like the biggest Beauty and the Beast fan as a kid.
And Chip is the best character.
After Belle. I mean, I love
Belle. Do you think?
She was my OG. She was my first crush, 100%. I was like 6 years old saying, I am going to marry Belle.
Yeah. I think for me, the Disney leads have gotten better.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Sure.
In terms of more rounded characters over the years. We're a big fan of Moana in this house.
Oh, love her.
Yeah, yeah.
Love Moana. But yeah, so I did that, and then this opportunity came through via Blue Peter. My parents...
That's it? You won a competition?
Yeah, so it's kind of crazy because people kind of sometimes ask me, like, how do you get into the industry? How do you get that first role? And I'm like...
You watch Blue Peter,
you
of course.
You enter a Blue Peter competition? But I was a huge Doctor Who fan. I still am, but a huge Doctor Who fan at the time. I think the first two series had come out, so I had bawled my eyes out at, you know... Rose Tyler being stuck in the parallel universe, you know. The music, oh, it still gets me. And so as an obsessed Doctor Who fan and a kid that was really interested in acting, here's this opportunity that comes along to win a part in Doctor Who. Like, you had to record a monologue and send it in to the casting directors. And out of however many thousand of kids that entered, they would pick a top 10 and then a top 3 and then a winner. And my parents came to me and said, do you want to do this?
Because that's so supportive.
So supportive. Yeah, I've got very incredibly supportive parents. And I was like, yeah, of course I want to do this. So we filmed it and sent it in. And
what did you film it on? Because I'm thinking, how old are you?
I was 8.
Okay, so when I was 8, I'm just thinking about how I would have filmed my audition. And it would have been on a really big, heavy camera.
Yeah, probably.
It was really expensive that you'd had to borrow from someone that you knew in the family that had and you would have to then go out and buy the Hi-8 tape, you know. It was really expensive.
Yeah.
And at this point, I can imagine my parents being like, this is just too much.
Yeah, it's just too much. You're never going to get it.
This is a lot of effort.
Yeah. Your dreams aren't worth it. No. My dad is actually like a very techie guy. So he took that as like a task to
I'm not going to
just, you know, give them the best edition. I'm going to give them the clearest edition.
Well, it worked. You know. Good one, Pops.
I know. Thank you. So we filmed it. I remember filming it in my bed. And there was three options, three different scenes that you could choose. And two of them were kind of like, ooh, action. There's a snake in the toilet. Blah, blah, blah. And then this other one, the third one.
I hate when there's a snake in the toilet.
Me too, right? And then the third one was this kind of quiet, reflective, the night I spent with the doctor monologue. And that's the one that I kind of chose because I just thought it was more kind of...
Drama,
right? There was more drama. I live for drama.
I could see your whole body and face change.
Yes.
With the thought.
With the thought of some good drama. So I chose that one.
I mean, you'd think snakes in your toilet's more drama, but that... No.
It was a bit silly.
Too silly. Too
lacked the depth.
Too silly for Doctor Who.
Yeah. I like the nuance. I chose that one, filmed it, sent it in, and I mean, I was just like, okay, cool, whatever, back to like playing with Legos. I don't know. And my parents were a bit like, oh, this is probably going to go to some kid that they know, you know, there's not really any chance, whatever. And then lo and behold, I get told that I'm in the top 10. I had to watch Blue Peter. I get told I was in the top 20 and I had to watch Blue Peter live to find out whether I made it to the top 10.
No.
Yeah. And then out of the rest of them.
And nowadays they would film your reaction to that, but they, you know, that's quite private.
It was very private. I just remember like screaming and running up. Like I was number 10 as well. Like I was the last kid they announced. So it was like, you know, nail biting to the end.
Somewhere for Us magazine is available now. Issue 13 could be yours, featuring comedian Stephen K. Amos, Scottish Doctor Who writer Rona Munro, author and presenter The Highland Hutter, and the final part of the Lynbrook Croft Diaries with a special Doctor Who celebration cover of queer icon Shuti Gatwa, created by Alfie Whitby. For Doctor Who fans, this is not to be missed. Visit somewhereforus.org.
And that whole process was amazing. I went down to the Shakespeare's Globe Theatre and did like a whole day's workshop with Andy Pryor and Annette Badlands, who's also an Outlander. And I've now seen her recently at conventions, Annette, and I've been like, you, were such a big part of my career. Which was lovely to kind of be able to say that and share that and show that I'd gone somewhere with it as well. And then, yeah, and then eventually I got a call from Russell T Davies to say that, like, I'd actually just won the whole competition and I was coming to Doctor Who to film. And I was like, oh my God, this is
that's just amazing.
Too much. And it was, yeah, it was just the most amazing experience. So that kind of entry into the industry for me was very unique. Such a great story, super fun. And
did they look after you? Like, how was the process of going into
I was so well looked after. I wasn't just like an actor coming onto set that time. I was the Blue Peter winner, you know. Which was really
did
sweet.
Did you please tell me you wore a badge?
Of course I wore a badge. I've got two badges, actually. I've got a blue one and an orange one, which is a competition winner. I think I got
nobody has orange ones.
Right? She's rare. No, I think I got into London Aquarium once for free with it. I think that's the only benefit I managed to get out of having a badge.
I love the idea that you win once.
But
once was enough.
That was it. But yeah, it was. They really looked after us. I was just sort of in awe at this. Like, I was literally in Doctor Who. We were in old mine shafts, mining production place in Wales somewhere. And so it was all this futuristic end of the world, you know, dystopian.
It's really put, I mean, I'm sure there are other things that put Welsh telly on the map, but it's seriously, Doctor Who has elevated Welsh TV production, hasn't
Absolutely.
It?
We love it. We love to see it.
Yeah. Most of my family are Welsh.
Hey.
So if you're listening,
come on the Celts.
Come on the Celts. I love how they say my name. Jewel.
I love that too. So yeah, so that, and then that huge opportunity, which I'll forever be grateful for, really just gave me that little professional credit, which allowed me to get an agent and then just sort of keep working from there. And yeah, I've been so blessed. Like,
such a good origin story.
It's a good origin story, right?
It's really good.
Yeah.
So have you done Doctor Who conventions? Comic-Con style things?
I've done like general conventions sometimes. I mean, I'm super blessed because I don't know how I've managed it, but I've become like a part of these huge fandoms, right?
So looking back at your cat, so for those who don't know, but most of you will.
Yeah.
John Bell was not only in Doctor Who.
Which is a phenomenon.
Phenomenon. But you were in The Hobbit.
Phenomenon.
Phenomenon.
And Outlander. And phenomenon. Outland. It was...
Of those three, what's the favourite?
Yeah. Oh, they're like my babies. I can't choose between my children.
Yes, you can. There's always one.
I can't choose between my children.
All right, so let me rephrase the question. Which one is the one you would get most excited to go and do again?
I mean, it's been a while since I've done like a Hobbit convention.
Oh, there it is.
Like a Lord of the Rings convention. I mean,
That must be full on.
It was, but so fun and so exciting. Like, I mean... The fans of each of these three TV series or films that I've been a part of are so passionate and obsessed and creative and all of these things. And so when you go to these conventions, you really feel the love and support from them.
Yeah, but also the energy, right? So
yeah,
you've
palpable.
Got this energy behind the next series that comes out, the next season. Or the next film that's already there. It's like this massive momentum of like well-wishing.
Yeah.
You know, like, do it, give us more. I want to know, actually, how much influence does a very big fandom have, do you think, on future storylines, particularly with something like Outlander? Do you think is it shaped storylines along the way? Like, are writers bothered about what the desperate need of fans...
I absolutely do think, yeah, we take into consideration what fans love, for sure. And I think anyone that says they don't read what fans think and say is lying. We think we all read the reviews, we all read the comments, you know, we want to see that people are enjoying what we're putting out there. So yeah, I definitely think that takes into consideration, but there is source material which is tried and tested, and is truly what the fans were first passionate about, a lot of them.
And if you don't do that, then there's going to be...
Yeah, but like try and get some of these huge tomes of books into like a 10-episode series, it's difficult.
So they announced earlier in the year that Outlander Season 8 is the last
series, yeah,
right?
It's the last one. We're going out with a bang. It's brilliant. And I mean, it's bittersweet. Like I'm sad that this part of my life is coming to an end and there's going to be a chapter there now. But at the same time, we had the opportunity to do it right. 8 seasons is...
And you were in it from season three?
Yeah, since season three. So 8 seasons of this show, that's really rare to get. And to be able to have the time to finish it properly and give it a farewell that's fabulous and fantastical and dramatic as ever is really cool.
Do you know what? One of my favourite things about Outlander, if it's all right to say.
Go for it.
is the relationships between men. Because obviously Claire and Jamie is this huge kind of one of the big kind of but vocal romance of it. And they really do it brilliantly.
They're the best at it.
Yeah, like, they are the best at it.
Yeah.
And that's really lovely to kind of follow for this length of time as well. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate that. But there's just there's things covered in Outlander I've never seen on television before.
Mm.
So the very beginning couple of seasons,
mm-hmm.
I'm saying seasons, which is a very American thing. Series to us, right?
Series, seasons, yeah.
it's like new language. No, I mean, the stuff with Jamie in jail and the abuse that he experiences and the mental health, the recovery of his mental health and how he gets through that.
Yeah.
I have never seen that on television ever.
Totally. Yeah,
I've never seen
and that. Sam's performance is
never seen
sublime.
It. One of the things that makes that so good as well is that it doesn't depend on women to fix it or, you know, and vice versa as well. A lot of Claire's issues, it doesn't depend on men to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about the individual's journeys and their kind of recovery through all the trauma that they experience. But that particularly for me and the relationship between you and Jamie and young Ian.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just having uncle and nephew relationship on screen for so long,
mm-hmm.
which is just pure, like, it's just pure sort of familiar love.
Yeah.
And I love seeing that.
Mm.
It's just like care.
Totally.
We don't often see it between men in that way. And mm-hmm. I think Outlander does that beautifully.
Yeah. There's a lot of great conversations between men on Outlander about mental health. And that's wonderful to see on screen. Jamie is such a modern man for the 1700s.
Yeah. I mean, he's to me, he's so queer.
Yeah.
Just because of how fluid
he's queer-coded.
He is. He's totally queer-coded. Yeah. He is. He's just so fluid in his thoughts and he's not in a box, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There's
not at all.
That character is not in a box. They kind of everything they do sort of twists and turns and they see things in a slightly different way and it moves and he's not a fixed sort of character, which is really, really nice.
If we're all on a scale, I don't think Jamie's 100% straight, you know?
And my wife discovered last night about the accent switch with Claire and Katrina's accent being so different from Claire's. She didn't realise that Katrina was Irish.
Yeah, totally, right? It's brilliant.
That was a new thing for Steph last night.
She's like, actors do accents?
Oh my God.
What?
Yeah, but
never heard of that.
You cannot take for granted people getting good accents. Like,
true.
That, I mean, her accent is impeccable.
But yeah, I mean, the thing about like Jamie's journey as well, which I've loved, is that young Ian's journey has sort of mirrored it in a way.
Yeah, it really.
And they've
has.
Gone through some similar things when it's come to traumas in their life and how to beat the demons, basically. And Jamie's had to kind of go through it on his own and learn how to do it on his own. And now he gets to pass on that knowledge to his nephew and help his nephew recover, basically, and become stronger for it.
Yeah.
So I love all that. And
it's really nice.
I'm very proud of those storylines between me and Sam.
There seems a bit like a great camaraderie with you offset as well, just from a lot of the stuff that I've seen. It looks like a nice family.
We don't do divas.
No. I remember Phoebe Waller-Bridge was talking at the Fringe Society get-together.
Phoebe Waller-Fringe.
at the festival. And she was talking about safety and at work and being feeling safe enough to take risks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of some of the storylines that have been covered in Outlander, and I think you would have to have a really supportive environment to do that work well.
Yeah.
Not just to do it, but to do it well.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
So that's really nice.
Yeah.
Can I just mention the Scottish BAFTAs clip I saw? Because it was so sweet. So when I was
BAFTAs clip. I was really drunk that
night. No, before that.
Okay.
No, there isn't one afterwards. I didn't know that, so there wasn't one I could find on that. But I was doing that thing where I was like, oh, good to watch you. I don't just want to read about you. I want to hear you speak and see what you're interested in. That kind of thing. So watching you at the Scottish BAFTAs last year.
Yes.
when everybody arrived and they're all quite self-conscious about what they look like, and you arrived in a lovely tux, and the amount of time you spent with the folks from Paisley, just signing.
That's my people.
Honestly, it was so
I'm a Paisley buddy. That's my people. I was born
so
at Paisley.
Cute to watch. It was so ridiculous.
Oh, but I mean, I was enjoying myself that night.
If you listen back, there's someone in the background just went, he's so nice. Yeah.
Love that. Yes. Come on, Reputation.
They've been there like 12 hours waiting for you. He's so nice.
He's so nice. Well, no, it's just
no,
like,
but I just thought
these are our fans. Like, I want to, you know, they've waited. They've been so kind to wait and support us and give us that boost before we go in. Want to give as much love and support back as I can in that moment.
Yeah, brilliant.
But I was a bit drunk that night though. Well, because I was obviously feeling myself.
Do they ply you with loads of free booze?
They do, but also Sam's a bad influence. So I think
I could see that.
So he was like passing around the whiskey and stuff, and I was like, ooh. Anyway, all this. And my mom texts me because
she's like, stop it.
Well, she's watching it on live stream and she's like, John, everyone can hear you. And I was like, what? No, they can. And then I just kept realizing that I was like, oh my God, Edith Bowman just keeps like looking at me and being like,
oh, as in stop
as
it.
As in quiet down. Because I was annoying her,
big,
I think.
Big heckler.
Big. I was living for it. I was just loving. I was just having a great time. And I was just shouting at everyone. I was like, you look so gorgeous. Like, who doesn't want to be told?
She was
told,
cut across as being, you know, gorgeous. Like, I'm sure she'd be like that at another event.
Oh, no.
Sure.
I mean, she was laughing, but she was also like, quiet down. We've got a job to do. And I'm like, another whiskey, please. And then at one point, I think Sophie and David were presenting an award that evening. And as in David Berry, Sophie Skelton from Outlander. And I'd been like telling Sophie, like, go up there and slay it. Slay it, Sophie. You better slay. And she walked onto stage. And so it must have looked so funny to people watching live, because she just like gets to the microphone, looks at me and goes, slay. Anyway, here are the nominees. So out of context, it must have looked strange, but I was like, that's my girl.
Hi, Jules here. All episodes of the Somewhere For Us podcast are available now, and you made it this far, so have fun exploring. I'm also really interested in what you want to hear about. Come and find Somewhere For Us podcast on Instagram, give me a follow, share your suggestions, or you can email me at jules@somewhereforus.org.
It was a good night. It was a fun night. And we won an amazing award. Sam won the Audience Choice Award for...
that's a biggie to get the Audience Choice.
Well, yeah. And gave a great speech.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Oh, I think the speech is very interesting. You should watch the speech.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a good speech. It's a real celebration of Outlander and everything that it's given the Scottish film and television industry.
Oh, well, that brings me to a question about being an actor. How much work is there? Is there fairness? Is there equality?
To speak frankly, like, yes, I'm a Scottish actor, but most of my opportunities have come from outside of Scotland. There seems to be, here in Scotland, I just don't know if I've ever kind of fallen into the right group here of creatives. I'm sure that there's wonderful people here, but I've just not really worked with many of them. Most of my opportunities have come from London, and they've come from America. To kind of say, like, what's my experience working in Scotland? I don't really have much experience working in Scotland. I'm very proud to be from Scotland, and I love Glasgow. That's my hometown.
Yeah.
And that's where I live at the moment, and it's where I feel most comfortable. But when it comes to the Scottish industry, it's just not been a huge part of my life.
It's
which
interesting
is odd.
Because when there's a new Scottish drama that comes out, and if it makes it to BBC at prime time, I can almost put money on who's going to appear in it somewhere along the line.
Sure.
Like, you see the same people appearing in stuff, and there has to be more folks out there.
Yeah.
And I think with more of a queer focus, there has to be just a more diverse range of actors out there can be on a bigger screen and representing the work. It's not my realm.
Sure, yeah.
But it does feel a bit small.
Totally, it can be. It can feel like that. And I mean, when I think of sort of queer Scottish icons, you know, I think of like Alan Cumming or Shitty Gatwa or me, you know, just to put myself in their company.
You should.
But we've all had to go elsewhere to find success. And so I hope that that's changing. And I want it to change. And I want to be part of that change. And there's definitely great theatre and stuff that's happening maybe outside of the mainstream that is all about that.
Yeah. There's a great
like Citizens Theatre in Glasgow. Love the sets amazing. And stuff like that.
And Take Me Somewhere. Do you know about Take Me Somewhere?
No.
Look them up.
Okay.
They're Glasgow based.
So there's a lot of like alternative stuff going on in Scotland, and we need to kind of figure that out in the mainstream as well a bit. I just think we should focus on in Scotland maybe just like nurturing our own talent that is here instead of kind of forcing them to head down to London, you know?
So talking of nurture, what nurtures you as a queer artist?
What nurtures me a queer artist? What nurtures me as an artist more?
Okay.
Is just like, is the ability to play a huge range of characters, whether they be queer or not. The things that nurture me as a queer person or as a gay man is kind of queer spaces and really just my very diverse group of friends. And then as an artist, it's more to do with like the massive amounts of roles that are available to me to play and characters that I can transform into. That's what really nurtures that creative side of me, you know?
So is there a role that you haven't done yet that you know is in your future and you would love to be in your future?
I mean, I've played a lot of like heroes and like good guys. I think there's something probably... being queer as well, that like the villains have always interested me too. You know, historically, you look at, you know, the queer coding that's gone on with villains and whether it's Disney films or big blockbusters, but we embrace them. We love them. Yeah. You know, Ursula, for example, from The Little Mermaid, we're talking about, she's...
Maleficent.
Maleficent. They're fabulous queer coded characters. And we've always embraced them as queer people. So I'd love to play some sort of like just baddie, just to the core, but also fabulous, you know.
A fabulous
flamboyant baddie. Give me that. I want that.
More of that. that's cool. Mm. So then I want to talk a little bit about issue 12 with the theme being coming out. And we've got some really, really beautiful coming out stories in the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wondered if you could share yours.
Yeah, I've got a good coming out story.
Have you?
Well, yeah, I mean, context-wise, you know, I basically came out, my mum, you know, tap dancing, you know, so it was always there. They were like, yeah, he's a little, you know, he's not grabbing trucks and smashing them into each other as a little boy, you know. I was very much like laying things out in patterns.
It's your heels smashing into
each other. You know, putting on my mum's shoes, all that classic stuff. So I never fairly felt the need to ever hide any parts of that for me in my life. But there was still this sort of pressure in society that like you had to kind of have a girlfriend and people would come up to you and be like, oh, you're going to be such a little, you know, heartbreaker for women and stuff like that. So there was that going on in my head, which is why I never really just kind of said it out loud. And as I grew older and realized I was gay, and then there was a little bit of like, oh, I don't really want this to be the case. Life seems harder because of it. I don't have anyone I can really talk to. I kind of kept myself inside. You know, for a few years. But I have such a wonderful supportive family. And also through my career, I'd worked with so many like inspirational gay men, that very quickly those feelings dissipated, as I saw that you can be happy and successful and loved, as an openly gay person. So the moment I was kind of building up in my head when I was going to say this to my parents, what was the right moment that I felt like I just had to kind of say it out loud to them for the first time. And it was 2013, 12. It was at the premiere of The Hobbit Part 2 in Berlin.
So you were like 16, 17?
Yeah, yeah. I was 17. I was 17. I was feeling so fabulous that night. I had on this beautiful purple kilt. My hair was did. I was just like, I was really looking fierce and felt fierce. And at the after party, I was, you know, just about to be 18. So I was allowed to have a couple drinks, and those couple drinks, I started sneaking more and more and more, and I was getting a bit litty bitty.
Getting a bit loose.
I was getting a bit loose on the dance floor for sure. And eventually I like went off to go party with some people, but my mum and dad were like, nope, you're 17. We're not letting you out in Berlin to like go off and party.
So probably quite sensible.
Very sensible. So unbeknownst to me, they had followed me in a car to make sure that I was okay, right? And then when I got to the destination to get out of the car, all of the, I think it was like espresso martinis, like hit me at once. And I just started feeling really woozy. And I like threw up everywhere, like all over my Doc Martens. Like the people that were with me were like, you can't come to the party anymore. And I was like, yeah, fair enough. I was like so embarrassed and humiliated. And then my mum and dad turn up and like they get out the car.
They knew.
So my mum gets out the car and she like starts walking towards me, you know, like, it's okay, honey, come with me. And I just like that, I take that moment and I just sort of, not just scream at her, like, I'm gay, but like scream to the world, like, I'm gay. Like, you know, Kreuzberg in Berlin was like, what? Who's gay today? and I screamed it. And then my mom kind of, you know, helped me clean up a bit and then went back to the car. My dad came out and I think people were like watching at this point. And I imagine it would have been one of those moments that was kind of like hard to look away from. Right. Yeah. It's like, this is a very private moment. I shouldn't be watching, but also like, what's going to happen next? And then my dad came over and I was like, Dad, I'm gay. I'm gay. I'm gay. And the only thing he said was, I know it's okay. Your mum told me. And just like took my hand and got me back in the car and looked after me for the rest of the night and woke up in the morning and said, none of that changes anything. We're just happy that you feel comfortable enough to kind of say that. And so, yeah, that's really kind of my story coming out. And I haven't looked back since.
It's quite a showbiz sort of story, that.
Yeah. I'm a bit of a showbiz guy.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for sharing it. What would you say to your younger self, your pre-coming out younger self? Is there anything you would say to have helped that moment, or was it always just destiny?
I think that moment was correct. Like, that was the right moment for me. I knew myself enough at that point. But there had been moments before where I might have rushed into things thinking I knew more. And so that's what I'd probably say to my younger self. I'd say, there's no rush. You can take all the time in the world to discover who you are. Don't let people take advantage of you, and don't let pressure, imagined or real, dictate what you say about who you are. You can take all the time in the world to do that, is what I'd say. Mm-hmm. There's no rush.
Somewhere for Us is a space for reassurance, inspiration, celebration, and connection with each other. And becoming a member of the Somewhere for Us magazine brings you closer to queer community in Scotland. Visit somewhereforus.org/shop.
You've mentioned that role models have been a big part of your life and your career.
Yeah.
And kind of propelling you forward, helping you feel safe to be who you are.
Yeah.
Who are they?
Starting off, my parents, huge role models in my life. Always looked like they had their shit together, you know. And then you grew up and you realize they did not have their shit together. They just were very good at pretending they did. But they're amazing role models to me. My grandparents are amazing role models to me. I have a lot of amazing family that are role models to me. My cousin Gary out in Japan is a huge role model to me. And then professionally, well, first of all, I went to dance classes when I was like between 8, it's like maybe 7 and 14. And there was a lot of fabulous gay male teachers in my school, Robert Hamilton, Ian West. I've spoken about them before. I will continue to speak about them, but their influence and creativity and spark were hugely important to me as a young kid.
It sounds like they were out too.
Oh, yeah, at least oh my god, so out. so out.
No coming back in.
No. And just wonderfully warm, fabulous, talented gay men. And as a young kid who didn't really maybe quite know that he was queer yet, but knew there was something different about him, they made me feel seen and believed in. And then other actors that have been a part of like shows that I've been on. I mean, David Tennant was a huge role model and I actually got to work with him, which is just like,
he seems like a nice guy.
Oh, he's the best.
He does. He just seems like a nice
guy.
Yeah.
Paisley man himself. Good stock there.
I enjoy his rapport with... name's got out of my head.
Michael Sheen.
Michael Sheen. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say Martin Sheen. I was pretty sure it's not Martin Sheen. With Michael Sheen. It's a nice
Report. On Hobbit as well, there were some amazing actors on Hobbit that I really looked up to. I mean, Adam Brown, who played Ori. He was one of the dwarves. Another... fabulous.
I'm going to nod in a sort of pretentious way, but...
He's the one that was like, do you like chips? He was... He's the cutest.
Yeah, we haven't touched on community yet.
Mm.
And you've talked about the importance of queer spaces.
Mm.
What's your experience of that in Scotland?
I've got amazing group of friends, straight and queer, that I go out with in Glasgow. I find the queer spaces are a real mix there of everyone and anyone, and I love it, and it's made me feel so welcome and comfortable, and I've had some of the best nights of my life just dancing away, looking fabulous and feeling the warmth and love of the community there. So I think Glasgow's got a great queer scene. So yeah, I think we're a bit spoiled in Glasgow.
I feel like more and more people are looking for different kinds of spaces, actually.
Mm.
Spaces where you're more affirmed as a person of colour, for example, and being queer, having spaces that are not all focused around drugs and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some amazing creative stuff happening with drag.
I think
the broadening...
It's like one of my favourite art forms to ever exist. I'm obsessed with it.
The episode... prior to this, it was with Rujazzle.
Oh, yes.
Who's a really... do you know Ru?
Yeah, I don't. I've seen shows, but I've never met...
Oh, I mean, he's such an inspiring person because he really has community at the heart of what he does. He really believes in the power of drag, in creating space for role modelling, you know.
Love that.
So that there's a strength to it.
For
you
sure.
Know, which is... And I think there is an accessibility to drag.
From what I can see in Scotland, there's a lot of talent and...
Oh, there really is.
And it's really great to see. I'm excited to come through to Edinburgh to support my dear friend Purina Alpha in the Majesty. Yeah, it's very cool. I mean, I did do drag recently.
Did you?
The first time. Yeah, yeah.
How did it go?
Well, it's wonderful. I'm sure we'll speak about it in the future, but to give you guys a taste at Somewhere for Us, I've just collaborated with Jeremy McLean, who's an actor from Pose and is also directing short films at the moment. This is kind of an exclusive here for you. It's a short film about a drag queen in Glasgow who falls off the wagon of sobriety and goes down this big kind of like dark hole of drugs and alcohol and comes and loses her confidence on stage. And it's about her journey back to... confidence, back to power.
I was going to say, does she come back to power?
Well, yeah, you have to find out and see. And it's about, you know, that journey to strength and sobriety in queer spaces. And it was fabulous to work on. We had some really talented crew behind it. And we have the wonderful MV makeup artist that did my makeup. And their work was... I looked gorgeous. I looked so gorgeous. Jeremy McLean, obviously.
Were you kind of Disney princess style? Or was it more like Disney
edgy,
villain?
Grungy, dirty, club kid. Bleh. Yeah, all that.
Ah,
it was
nice.
Great. It was great.
A bit more Bimini.
And so I'm really excited to kind of promote that and show that side of me. I will say there is a whole nother level of respect for drag artists now.
The time, right?
The time, the pain, the... there's no feeling better than like when you look, see you next Tuesday and you're serving it. I can understand that's addictive, that feeling. But they might have... talent and practice to look good.
Is there anything that you're planning or that you're working on at the moment that you want to tell Somewhere for Us listeners?
Well, yeah, I suppose I just mentioned the short film's called Miss Temperance, so that'll be coming out very soon. I believe we have picture lock on that. At the moment, I'm really just kind of getting ready to head back to Outlander Season 8 to finish that off, you know? Like, that... Outlander takes up such a huge part of the year, and there's, you know, part of my contract, which means I'm exclusive to Outlander, so I can't really work on much else.
Yeah.
While
sure. And how long does that hold? How long does the series take? Because you're in it all the way through.
Oof, like 10 months it's going to be wow. from like start to finish for sure.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And where are you filming?
We're filming around Scotland.
Oh, that's nice.
Around Glasgow, so I can stay at home. So yeah, I'm just kind of getting ready for that next year, all starting up again. And yeah, in the meantime, just chilling. Having a laugh.
As you said that, the sun came out.
Look at that. And it's that rainbow. Oh my gosh, and there's a unicorn as well.
We wish you all the best with all your future projects. And I'm excited for you beyond Outlander too.
Yeah.
Because you're
terrified.
No, I'm kidding. You should be.
No, it should be amazing. I'm excited to see what the next thing is. But yeah, thank you.
You're such a huge talent. You're such a lovely person. He's so nice.
He's so nice. That's the wild, wild west. Yeah.
Yeah. Come back and talk to us and let us know what's happening.
Sounds good. All right.
All right. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Jules.
You've been listening to Somewhere for Us, produced and presented by me, Jules Stapleton Barnes. There are so many more queer stories to tell here in Scotland. So come and follow me on Instagram, on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts, or visit somewhereforus.org/podcast.